Good Wednesday evening. Jeff Bennett here with our usual Wednesday night offerings to Health with Hugh. It has been an interesting day. I just realized moments ago, I began working with Dr. William Kelly in late 1998 or 99. And to sit there and realize how many years that's been, 24, 25 years. And during that time period, we have witnessed a massive increase in cancer cases, specifically in the area of people under 50, all over the world. An 80% increase in cancer with people under 50 in three decades. More than a million under 50 people a year are dying of cancer. And that figure is projected to rise by another 21% by the end of this decade. Seven more years. The number of under 50s worldwide being diagnosed with cancer, as I mentioned, has risen by nearly 80% in those three decades. Global cases of early onset cancer increased from 1.82 million in 1990 to 3.26 million by 2019. Cancer deaths of adults in their 40s, 30, or younger grew by 27%. More than a million people under 50 a year are now dying of cancer. Experts are still in the early stages of understanding the reasons behind the rise in these cases. And the authors of this study, which has been published by BMJ Oncology, say that poor diet, alcohol, tobacco use, physical inactivity, obesity are certainly likely to be among the factors. And since 1990, the incidence and deaths of early onset cancers have substantially increased globally. Encouraging a healthy lifestyle, including a healthy diet, the restriction of tobacco and alcohol consumption, appropriate outdoor activity, all these things could reduce the burden of early onset cancer. Previous studies have suggested that the incidence of cancer in adults under the age of 50 had been rising in various parts of the world over the past few decades. And the latest study was led by the University of Edinburgh in Scotland and Zhejiang University School of Medicine in Hangzhou, China, first of its kind to examine the issue on a global scale and the risk factors for younger adults. And most of the previous studies focused on regional and national differences. In this global study, researchers analyzed data from 204 countries covering 29 types of cancer. And they looked at new cases and deaths and health consequences, contributory risk factors for all those aged 14 to 49 to estimate the changes between 1990 and 2019. In 2019, new cancer diagnosis among the under 50s totaled 3.26 million. That was an increase of 79% on the 1990 figure. Breast cancer accounted for the largest number of cases and associated deaths at 13.7 and 3.5 for every 100,000 of the global population, respectively. And cases of early onset windpipe and prostate cancers rose the fastest between 1990 and 2019. Estimated annual percentage changes of 2.28% and 2.23%, respectively. But at the other end of the spectrum, cases of early onset liver cancer fell by an estimated 2.8% a year. And a total of 1.06 million under 50s died of cancer in 2019. That was an increase at 27% on that 1990 figure. And after breast cancer, the highest death tolls were linked to windpipe and lung and stomach and bowel cancers. And the steepest increases in deaths were among people with kidney or ovarian cancer. Highest rates of early onset cancers in 2019 surprise, surprise, we're in North America, Oceania, and Western Europe. Low and middle income countries were also affected. Highest death rates among the under 50s were in Oceania, Eastern Europe, Central Asia. And in low and middle income countries, early onset cancer had a much, much greater impact on women than on men in terms of poor health and deaths. And the numbers go on and on and on. We take a look at genetic factors in some instances. They may have a role. Diets high in red meat and salt and low in fruit and milk, along with alcohol and tobacco use, are the main risk factors underlying the most common cancers among the under 50 crowd. Physical inactivity, excess weight, high blood sugar contributory factors, all of those things are included. Dr. Claire Knight, a senior health information manager at Cancer Research in the UK, which was not involved with the study, by the way, said that it was not yet clear what was driving the trend and urged caution. However alarming this might seem, cancer is primarily a disease of older age, with the majority of new cancer cases worldwide being diagnosed in those age 50 and above. This is more words from Dr. Claire Knight. She said, we need more research to examine the causes of early onset cancer for specific cancer types. There's something called a BCAN Ray study, which is looking at new ways to identify younger women at higher risk of breast cancer. She concludes by saying that if people are concerned about their cancer risk, then there are lots of ways to help reduce this, such as not smoking and maintaining a balanced diet and getting plenty of exercise and staying safe in the sun. I would agree with most of those things, but your problem is we're dealing with a whole mentality, a whole difference in the way people exist in this country and around the world today. Interesting piece that came from Carly Casella out of Science Alert the other day, a couple of weeks ago. And I pulled this up and forgot I had it. It's a little thing talking about a useless organ. It's considered useless. It's an organ that doctors often remove that may actually fight cancer. There's this small fatty gland that sits behind your sternum. It's often said to be useless in adulthood. But a recent retrospective study, however, suggests that the thymus, T-H-Y-M-U-S gland, is not nearly as expandable or expendable as experts once thought. U.S. researchers found that those who get their thymus removed face an increased risk of death from any cause later in life. And they also face an increased risk of developing cancer. Now, this study at this point is purely observational, which means it cannot show that removing the thymus directly causes cancer or other fatal illnesses. But researchers have become concerned by their findings. That until they know more, they argue that preserving the thymus should be a clinical priority where possible. Oncologist David Scadden stated that the magnitude of risk was something we would never have expected. You see, in childhood, the thymus is known to play a critical role in developing the immune system. And when the gland is removed at a young age, patients show long-term reductions in T cells, which are a type of white blood cell that combats germs and disease. Kids without a thymus also tend to have an impaired immune response to vaccines. And by the time a person hits puberty, the thymus shrivels up, produces far fewer T cells for the body, but it can seemingly be removed without immediate harm. And because it sits in front of the heart, it is often taken out during cardiothoracic surgery. About some patients with thymus cancer or chronic autoimmune diseases like myasthenia gravis require a thymectomy in which the thymus is surgically removed. The gland isn't always a hindrance. In fact, it could actually be a big help. Using patient data from a state healthcare system. Researchers in Boston compared the outcomes of patients who had undergone cardiothoracic surgery. More than 6,000 people who did not have their thymus removed and 1,146 people who did have their thymus removed were all part of this research. Those who underwent a thymectomy were almost twice as likely as controls to die within 5 years, even after accounting for sex and age and race and those with cancer of the thymus, myasthenia gravis, or post-op infections. Patients who had their thymus removed were also twice as likely to develop cancer within 5 years of surgery. But what's more, this cancer was generally more aggressive and often recurred after treatment compared to the control group. Why these associations exist is unknown, but researchers suspect a lack of thymus is somehow messing with the healthy function of the adult immune system. A subset of patients in the study who had undergone a thymectomy showed fewer diverse T cell receptors in their blood work, which could possibly contribute to the development of cancer or autoimmune diseases after surgery. And yet together, these findings support a role for the thymus contributing a new T cell production in adulthood and to the maintenance of adult human health. Those, according to the authors of the study. Their results, they say, strongly suggest that the thymus played a functionally important role in our continued health, right up to the bitter end. The bitter end. Interesting piece. Interesting piece. Well, then we sit there and look at some of the other nonsense going on, some of the other headlines. You know, it just drives you crazy. Say, as I stated in a posting I made on September 1st under the heading Drugs, Masks, and COVID, again, this is over at drkelly.net, dated September 1st. Medicare to start negotiating prices for 10 drugs. That particular article is decent. I'm going to replace it in a full publication later tonight with a far superior piece. But it angers me because it has to do with the administration wanting to force Medicare to begin price negotiations. Heart disease-related pills, two of which I am prescribed, one of which has become so outrageously expensive it's sickening. A three-month supply is almost $500. I raised a big stink with my doctor's associate when I was in several weeks ago, and she said, next time you're due for renewal, you come see me. And she'll supply me a month at a time at absolutely no cost. This is insane. This is pure insanity. Anyway, we'll be doing more than that. But the reason I published the first one is because I've got a picture of this Hollywood movie actress whose name I can't remember. Hello, doctor. Please, can I show you my detail aid? And the subheading underneath is one I've left there for years. To sell their drugs, pharmaceutical companies hire former cheerleaders and ex-models to wine and dine the doctors and exaggerate the drugs. Enough is that. But on top of all this, the crock has begun once more. New research sheds light on side effects of the COVID-19 vaccination. Yeah, right. New COVID variant may be causing a strange new symptom at night. Yeah, if you're not already getting jabbed. Ha, ha, ha. Mask mandate update as CDC responds to speculation. And I go out several times a week late at night just to get maybe some coffee or some tea, and a little something to nibble on. And more people are showing up at this restaurant in the middle of the night with their damn COVID masks on. A waitress who is the sister of my usual waitress late at night, who recently gave birth to twins last week. And she's not, the new gal, her sister, the younger sister, is not a particularly good waitress. She's horribly, horribly slow. She's a nice personality, but that's, and she's wearing a mask. This is insanity, people. We're all getting suckered into this crap. It is truly the crock of you know what. I'm not interested in playing that game. Are you? So let's go back and talk a little bit. No, I'm gonna, let's talk a little bit about COVID. Not COVID per se, but one of the medicines that was strongly urged several years ago that the medical community did everything they can to trash it. I mean, during the years of the COVID-19 deception, the first time around, it was reported that COVID was rare in parts of Africa where ivermectin was used weekly as a preventative of river blindness and HCQ used as a preventative of malaria. It was also reported that large parts of India used ivermectin as a preventative and a cure and was little bothered by COVID. The same in Brazil and Peru. Wherever ivermectin was used, there were no excess deaths. It is a proven cure for COVID. The reality is, don't let anybody BS you. Don't let anyone tell you one damn bit different. So while all this was going on, and the various countries we've just referenced, eventually the Japanese recognized ivermectin's virtue, adopted it as the official cure, as the much-touted vaccine proved to provide no protection, but in fact, posed a serious threat to life and health. Come on. Do your study. Do your reading. Look at the number of deaths due to that vaccination. Horrific. And today, this very day, the medical establishment still tries to suppress ivermectin and HCQ. And for the same reason as during the alleged pandemic. An inexpensive preventative and cure stands in the way of big pharma profits and mandates for vaccinations and masks and lockdowns. The COVID years taught us that relatively few doctors are competent or capable of independent thinking. They have the interest to find approved medicines such as ivermectin that are effective against new pathogens. Those doctors who save lives, to the great distress of the medical establishment, the doctors who save their patients' lives, are still being punished for having done so. So along comes September 2021. The corrupt American Medical Association told doctors to stop prescribing ivermectin for COVID-19. And in a statement, the AMA, along with the American Pharmacists Association, the APHA, APHA, and the American Society of Health System Pharmacists, ASHP, warned that, quote, "We are alarmed by reports that outpatient prescribing for and dispensing of ivermectin have increased 24-fold since before the pandemic and increased exponentially over the past few months. As such, we are calling for an immediate end of the prescribing, dispensing, and use of ivermectin for the prevention and treatment of COVID outside of a clinical trial." Now, keep in mind, my friends, that was 2 years ago. And they continue to say, in addition, we are urging physicians, pharmacists, and other prescribers, trusted healthcare professionals in their communities, to warn patients against the use of ivermectin outside of FDA-approved indications and guidance. whether intended for use in humans or animals, as well as purchasing ivermectin from online stores. Dr. Joseph Mercola asked, how many died unnecessarily as a result of these commands? And frankly, Mercola's question is a good one. Those who died from COVID died because of a lack of treatment. For an untested vaccine to be put into use under emergency use authorization, there must be no cures. And therefore, the medical establishment, which serves as a marketing agent for Big Pharma, had to deny that there were any cures. And to prevent doctors from curing patients with ivermectin and HCQ before the knowledge of the cure spread. Otherwise, the agendas served by the death shot would be blocked. Well, now that the medical establishment has a new COVID variant with which to scare people and an updated dangerous vax, there is talk of a new round of vax and mask and lockdown mandates. We've already read and shared with you headlines and brief stories about schools that are being completely shut down. Schools just opened after summer, and they're shut down for 2 weeks. It's insane. All of these measures the medical establishment is trying to cram down our throat or jab in our arm or wherever are very dangerous. They're totally unnecessary. But they maximize profit and control. That, my friends, is their purpose. Advice to you is that if you have a doctor who warns you away from ivermectin, as Paul Craig Roberts states, you have a dumb shit or corrupt doctor who is very dangerous to your life and health. Quickly find another one who has the interest to know the facts and the determination to put his or her patients ahead of Big Pharma's profits. And certainly, do not trust any corporate hospital. Paul Craig Roberts. Ivermectin is a proven cure for COVID. Don't let anyone tell you any different. We have this published on drkelly.net as we speak. And here my phone rings. Isn't this marvelous? I'm not going to answer it. It'll probably wind up being something important. Hey, Julie. Are you there? We're going to reach the bottom of the hour, and as I often do on Wednesdays, oops, didn't mean to do that. We're going to get to the bottom of the hour, and frankly, I want to dance with Kim. Now, that allows me to take care of some real quick business, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. During the second half of the program tonight, we're going to share a couple of things. Julie, are you there? Hi, babe. Yeah, maybe not. Let me get this in here. I can't even move. Hang on here. Almost done. Sorry about that, folks. I don't normally do that. By the way, something very interesting. We went through this with Facebook. Basically been banned with Facebook. Oh, they keep offering me to come back on, sign back up again, you know. Here's a code to get in, put your, you know, your username and all that stuff in. I forget them. I'm not going to play it. And they are controlling what people can and cannot talk about politically, from a health standpoint, etc. And now YouTube has amped up their medical misinformation policy. You can no longer talk about alternative cancer treatments or prevention of any disease on YouTube. They're shutting people down. The Google-owned YouTube video platform has changed the rules again to now prohibit the sharing of information about alternative cancer remedies, which the tech giant says constitute medical misinformation. In a long-term vision notice on its official blog, YouTube's Dr. Darth Graham, the director and global head of healthcare and public health partnerships, along with Matt Halperin, the VP and global head of trust and safety, explain how removing cancer misinformation is now a top priority, alongside removing all contrary information about the Wuhan coronavirus. They said that in the years since we began our efforts to make YouTube a destination for high-quality health content, we've learned critical lessons about developing community guidelines in line with local and global health authority guidance on topics that pose serious real-world risks, such as misinformation on COVID-19 and vaccines and reproductive health and harmful substances and more. That's what their blog post reads. And they go on to say, we're taking what we've learned so far about the most effective ways to tackle medical information to simplify our approach for creators, viewers, and partners. Oh, and by the way, last fall, Dr. Graham announced the launch of a brand new certification protocol for YouTube videos that contain any type of medical information, period. Everything must now directly align with the dictates of the globalist-led World Health Organization. You see, YouTube is not a platform for distributing, information that could harm people, the company says. Well, now that COVID is fast becoming a thing of the past, much to the chagrin of the globalists, they brought it back, YouTube is moving on to the next major medical point of contention, cancer and cancer treatments. I'll let you know when. Give me about 1 minute. So thanks to the internet, millions of people are learning that traditional therapies like chemo and radiation are subpar options when there are safe and effective natural remedies, some of them strictly prohibited in the United States, that do the job without causing systemic harm to patients. And since cancer is a, multi-billion dollar industry, YouTube and the rest of the establishment is scrambling to put a lid on all forms of alternative cancer treatments that its users might try to share via the video streaming platform. And according to YouTube, anything other than official cancer treatments constitute misinformation will no longer be allowed on the platform. Users who violate said rules by attempting to share helpful info with desperate cancer patients will be punished. But kick us off. It's quite interesting because I was looking at a three-part video again that I've had in my possession for years. It was done by a writer, etc., a man who had been one of Dr. Kelly's patients for many, many years and traveled around the world talking about the Kelly protocols, the Kelly program, and what he had gone through. I guess if I post it, they'll pull it down. Anyway, hey, it's that time of the day. Let me go take a quick break. I'll be back. We're going to go down a very interesting road for the balance of this program. I got to go dance with Kim. Stay right back. one moment in this program every hour where I find a little bit of peace. It is not easy to find peace today, for so many respects. Welcome back to The Health With You on this Wednesday, the 6th day of May. This has been a very tough month or so for me. As many of you are aware of the fact, it was 2 years ago, on August the 26th, that my wife and I lost our son. I've thought how many times what caused it. Oh, I have no doubt about it. Drugs were the ultimate cause. But I've had to go back and look at how our son got involved with drugs. Where our son lived for a good part of our life was in northeastern Phoenix. Just a couple blocks away from Shea Boulevard. And you can get on Shea and you start heading right up towards Scottsdale. We lived in a very, very unique neighborhood. It was one of the first two neighborhoods in Arizona that was built with a homeowners association. Every year, a massive, massive party was given on Memorial Day weekend, which brought people back who lived in the neighborhood so many years ago for, you know, previously to massive barbecues and entertainment and the whole nine yards. Well, our son at that time was in high school, and I think possibly out of high school at one point, and was an avid hockey player, both roller and ice. And I was at a game one night, not too far from our home. It was ice hockey, and he was hurt massively. And they had to call an ambulance and have him hauled to the local hospital. Well, after they spent several hours working with him, I certainly had gone down there to camp out and stay with him, and their intent was to work with him and then let him out and let him go home, and I had to take him home. The hospital prescribed some pretty intense drugs for him. To the best of my knowledge, he'd smoked a little bit of wacky weed, and most of the kids in high school did it, you know. But to the best of my knowledge, that is what introduced him to hard drugs. Prescribed by the medical profession. And you can only get those drugs for so long, and the prescription would run out, and you had to start looking for alternatives to resolve your issues. And then he met a gal, and they had a child together, my Sophia Rose, and they wound up buying a house together, eventually, and they moved back east. They decided they didn't want to stay in Arizona. Well, both our son and his gal were pretty heavily into drugs. Caught her on several occasions. She was actually dealing with the damn things. But he still stayed on because of his ongoing problems from that injury that he had received. But the problem is, it's not as simple as that. You begin to take more and more because it becomes habit. Eventually, he and the gal and the baby move back here. They live with us. And ultimately, he wound up going out one night, meeting a guy half a block away and getting fentanyl. Oh, interesting. Well, it was this funky street fentanyl stuff that's useless. And God knows what it's made of. And I'm not sure that I can discuss it at full length. But ultimately, he wound up going into rehab three different times and eventually got out. An amazing kid. The friends that he would make, the assistance, the help he was able to give other people who were on drugs and help them get out from underneath it. But he couldn't get out from underneath it himself. I'm not sure that I'll ever understand it. I can make up reasons. But when we address this issue, and there's a whole reason that I've talked about this tonight, because what we're witnessing is a troubling surge in fentanyl overdoses within our communities over the last few months. Out where we live, it's gotten horrendous. And this alarming trend necessitates immediate attention and concrete efforts from all of us. Concerted efforts, I'm sorry. There's not a single cause for this rise in cases, no one-size-fits-all solution. It is crucial that we refrain from assigning blame and focus our energy on what we can do as individuals and as communities to combat the fentanyl crisis. And one of the most effective immediate actions we can take is to spread the word, raise awareness. Engage in open conversations with family members and friends and acquaintances about the dangers of fentanyl and share this critical information with others. It's through this collective effort that we can bring about change, positively impact, hopefully, our immediate surroundings. A primary example of successful community awareness is the dissemination of information regarding Narcan. That is a medication capable of reversing fatal fentanyl opioid overdoses. Numerous households now include Narcan as part of their first aid kits, helping save lives in emergency situations. But allow us to present, if you will, a few stark facts to highlight the severity of the issue. In 2022 alone, last year, the DEA seized over 50.6 million fentanyl pills. And shockingly, 6 out of every 10 pills tested by the DEA contained a lethal dose of fentanyl. And fentanyl overdoses now stand as the leading cause of death among Americans aged 18 to 45. And this highly addictive drug is responsible for nearly 70% of the over 107,000 overdose deaths recorded across the United States last year alone. And in response to this crisis, community substance abuse coalitions are addressing the issue head on. Out here where we live, there was a group called WOW, another one called 3PC, the Way Out West Coalition, the Rise Up Glendale Coalition, Peoria Primary Prevention Coalition. These are three communities that consist of concerned community leaders and members who actively engage in community awareness initiatives through education. And these coalitions and many others throughout the nation recognize that education and awareness represent powerful tools in combating this problem. All three groups organize. They provide free information sessions, talks, training on various topics such as fentanyl and opioid and vaping and underage drinking, teen marijuana use, prescription drug abuse. Teen marijuana use. There's no restriction anywhere in this country anymore. Anybody can suck that crap up, and I can't stand the smell of it. Each one of the coalitions that we have out here provides free resources on their websites. And you can contact them, schedule them to talk to your group, your organization. And you can find others like that throughout the country where many of you live. And most guarantee that it'll be eye-opening and helpful for all who attend and participate in get-togethers of this type. groups like this, their goal is to make it easier for everyone by understanding the power and the dangers associated with fentanyl and opioids and how to put safeguards in place. And by equipping individuals with the knowledge and the resources to make informed decisions, coalitions of this type hope to prevent further overdoses and save lives. But what can we do to stop this stuff from being brought in the country? From south of the border. It's insane. Because, my friends, the responsibility to address this crisis extends beyond the efforts of coalitions of our local communities. Each one of us, you and I, has a role to play in mitigating the impact of fentanyl overdoses within our own communities. We must remain vigilant. We must spread awareness, actively participate in education initiatives. We can collectively work toward reducing the prevalence of fentanyl-related incidents. It's interesting, some of these words I'm sharing with you. I was out picking up a load of silver from one of my local suppliers this morning. And there's a place that I drive by each time I go there. The place that my son had to go to several times a week. This is after he'd gotten let out of one of his the places up in Prescott he'd been to. And he had to go to this place for meetings several times a week. And I've always been tempted to stop in and just talk with the people who run the place. Try to find out how many people they've been able to save, how many they've lost. Maybe I can make myself available to come and speak. I have much experience in these fields. Not so much in the drug side. I've never been a user. But having been raised by folks who were so deeply into alcohol and everything else, there's so many comparisons, so many similarities. Keep in mind that it is crucial to recognize the significance of seeking help, support for those who are struggling with substance abuse of any kind. Substance use disorders are complex. They're multifaceted. They require a comprehensive approach that encompasses prevention and treatment and ongoing support. And so if you or someone you know is battling addiction, it becomes essential to reach out to local healthcare providers, support groups, or helplines to assess the assistance and the resources necessary for recovery. The surge in fentanyl overdoses within this nation demands immediate action and collaboration. Don't wait for the government to do it. We must spread awareness. We must engage in dialogue. We need to support these community initiatives because you and I can make a tangible difference in addressing crises of this type. We must prioritize the well-being of our respective communities, foster empathy and understanding, work together towards a future free from the devastating impact of fentanyl overdoses. I came across what I've just shared with you in our local community newspaper on July 19th. It is interesting because in most cases, our local community newspaper, which comes out every Wednesday, has an online version, and they will publish things like this. And I kept watching and waiting, and they never published it. I am so thankful that I kept it. It has been 2 years, 4 days ago, since we buried our son. I have only been out to his gravesite several times. A lot of it has been my health issues. Certainly this summer, the heat has been horrific. I just don't like being in the car very long. It took a considerable period of time once my wife and I made a decision on his headstone and selected the design and what images would go on it, etc., etc. It was my intent to go out there last weekend. I didn't make it. Personally, I'd like to get up and get out of Phoenix. But I'll not leave. Not now. This is where our son is. This is where we'll stay. But my God, people, what's happening in our southern borders are horrific. It's not directly health-related by any stretch of the imagination. The number of people that are invading this nation has become unbelievable. I opened a piece an hour and a half ago that I just absolutely could not believe. Migrants from around the world stream across the closed, the so-called Biden-closed border to Arizona. I'll be publishing this piece later. It's horrific. Just unbelievable. I'm also going to be publishing a piece on Dr. Kelly's site that talks about the first 10 drugs that this administration has chosen to attack to get lower pricing. What? We're going to wait till 2026? The cost of those drugs, you're going to kill me. It's unbelievable. Sheltering costs for rising numbers of migrants, $7 million a month in Arizona alone. How many of those people have brought fentanyl with them? Maybe they got caught with it. Maybe they didn't. It's unbelievable what's happening. More and more and more people are going to die. It is simply appalling, my friends. Absolutely appalling. Final comment. Gotta bear with me, I lost track of the site. Water, water everywhere. Not enough to drink. Yeah, right? Check this one out. No, I don't know how I did this. I lost it. I absolutely lost this piece. I'll be dinged. Nah, that's insane. I lost a whole piece I was going to comment on. It has something to do with what's going on with water. Very, very strange. Well, I do apologize. We lost it. Stuff happens. Where is it? Here it is. Here it is. Here it is. I do have it published somewhere. How about this one? Tap water. The stuff that comes out of our faucet. Out here in the Southwest where I live, it's been discovered that the tap water is heavily contaminated with cancer-causing arsenic. But it's not just in the Southwest. It's in 31 states across the country. But a lot of it in the Southwest is arsenic-contaminated water. Serious issue, only being made worse by pesticide used on crops and industrial processes like cement and manufacturing, both of which leave behind toxic residues in the groundwater used for drinking. Interesting stuff. So that's okay. We'll leave the border open. Let them keep coming in. Busloads are still getting transported around the country. I just don't know what we're going to do in this country. so many, many things going on. So little being done about it. The insanity. The pure insanity of what's going on in Washington, D.C. It's nuts. Government medicine creating more physician burnout, which I shared with you, I think, the headline at least a couple of weeks ago. Our doctors are suffering. It's unreal. 8 in 10 hospitals and pharmacists are rationing drugs or delaying care because of crippling medicine shortages, including those used for cancer. Do you begin to understand what's going on? There are those who just don't give a damn. They don't care about us. They could care less if we kick the bucket. Now you got these leaders that are sick in more ways than one, mentally and physically. Joey's about to be 81. His wife's got COVID. And there was an interview done with the vice president today. It's enough to make you vomit. She's ready to do what's necessary if something should happen. Oh, is she going to do a 180-degree turnaround with her mentality? Our gas prices are up. Our drug prices are up. Our food prices are up. Everything's going up. The national debt is up. Joey is over in the Ukraine again, negotiating away more of our money. And we can't take care of our own problems in this nation. Physically, mentally, emotionally, politically. It's pretty unbelievable to me. All these years on the air, and I seriously must ask myself the question, why? Who's listening? What are they doing about any of it? Thanks for joining us tonight. Thanks for allowing me the fentanyl commentary, etc. A little bit of personal time. The good Lord sees fit to bring us together again with glass lifted on high. I say to health with you. Good night. It brings back a memory evergreen. I'm with you once more under the stars and down by the shore an orchestra's playing and even the they begin the beginning. To live it again is past all endeavor, except when that tune clutches my heart. Divine, what rapture serene, till clouds came along to disperse the joys we had tasted. And now when I hear people curse the chance that was wasted, I know but too well what they mean.
they begin the beginning. Suddenly know what heaven we're in when they begin the beginning. When they begin the beginning.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be a bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show. Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio. Only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.